It's certainly that Tom Hardy's released a line of clothing.
It goes on sale at Selfridges tomorrow. And he said, for men who like working out.
Oh, I don't like that T-shirt he's wearing.
Yeah, it's a horrible T-shirt.
He's not actually a very big guy.
No, he's not at all.
He has got big, like when he played Bane, but he's only short.
That's a lot of clever camera work.
So when he's playing Bane, he towers over Christian Bale.
Yeah.
Christian Bale's 6'2 and he's 5'9.
Exactly.
So it's like me towering over you.
Good luck. I watched the Reacher film. Yep. Amazing one-liners in it. Some of the best one-liners. But Tom Cruise, when you know Reacher should be 6'5.
6'5 and 18 stone.
Yeah.
Of solid muscle.
Basically, The Rock.
Well, similar to James Haskell. James Haskell's an inch shorter, but like physically, because the blonde hair, not traditionally good looking. Obviously, Reacher's a bit older, but.
Yeah, he's one of the older.
Jamie Cudmore.
Jamie Cudmore's a great shot.
Yeah.
Jamie Cudmore, or maybe, I was going to say Ben Kay, but he's too jovial.
Yeah.
He's the right size for it.
Bald, but he's not in as good a shape. You need to be in, like, Cudmore shape.
Cudmore, that's a great shout.
Can I interrupt this very metro conversation to maybe get proceedings going with the podcast?
Were you recording that?
I might have been. Is your head in the game, JB?
Massively in the game.
Are you ready for this, Phil?
Always.
All right, hands in. One, two, three.
Pod.
Welcome again to another Egg Chasers Rugby podcast as we sharpen our skills and get ourselves ready for the brand new season and look back at the end of the Southern Hemisphere Super Rugby season as well. There's loads going on this podcast, not least Phil getting up close and personal with some Harlequins quads.
Yeah, some wonderful quads, some wonderful arms as well.
More on right. That in a little bit. More on that in a little bit. Yeah, it was the end of the Super Rugby season, and we will be definitely talking about that. We've got a fan free agency as clubs from up and down the land try and win our affections as a potential club for Phil to support. There's loads to talk about, gents. JB has had a sort of, well, not rugby, but you had a sporting encounter with Sly Stallone as well, didn't you?
Yeah, so that's some real arms and legs there.
That's going to be coming. That's going to be coming up on the podcast as well. But it has been a big week, and I think we should start with your trip. Now you were working in London, so you. What did you say to your bosses about the reason you weren't going to be in work first thing in the morning?
A networking event.
That's not a,
which it was.
That's fine. Yeah.
I only missed a couple of hours, but I definitely put the hours in last week, so I think I'm okay.
All right, fair enough. Well, you went. Up the shard, and that's not a euphemism for anything.
Yeah, half of what I was excited about was actually just going up the shard. It's awesome. 68th or 69th floor for like 360 views of London, which for the first few minutes before the players arrived, that's what I was enjoying. And I kind of forgot that I was about to look at the new kit, about to meet some of the players. And then when they all walked through wearing their lovely new kit, I was like, oh, yes, now it gets interesting.
Awesome.
So you met some of the Quins international players who were there to unleash the brand new kit. Now, if you haven't seen the kit, then you can look back. Well, I'm sure you'll find it online. We've posted it on our Twitter account, at Rugby Podcast. And Phil, you got up close and personal with a brand new stash from Harlequins. What was your impression of the kit?
Well, I think all of us saw a picture the night before of just the shirt. They looked decent, but not incredible. But when you actually saw them as a full ensemble with the shorts and with the socks as well, and then on the
it's the first time I've ever heard of some rugby stats being referred to as an ensemble.
Yes, we always say that.
I like it.
I watched the Sevens last night, which basically they're all dressed as your favourite teams, but they're not your favourite teams. And the Harlequins had their away kit on with the red shorts. I love the red shorts.
Yeah,
they look really cool.
They did look really good with those socks. The socks were awesome. Mm. Interestingly, Marlon Yard had a ladder in his socks. They would like rip down the side, which is not what you want when you're demonstrating the quality of that Adidas bring to hard-wearing rugby kits.
Now, I'm not saying I could improve the kit. I wouldn't say that. But if I was to improve the kit, the lines on the back of the shirt should be in like three different colours.
Yeah, I do know what you mean. Like the Italians.
I think this is another addition to the golden age of stash. I was dubious about the away shirt, but with the whole kit.
If I was going to buy one, I probably would go for the away one, actually.
I'd go for the home top, but I like the away kit more.
Boys, listen, great as our conversation talking about the kit is, Phil went and chatted to some international players.
Yeah.
He was up the shard with Jordan Turner-Hall, with Ugo Monier, with Marlon Yard, with Danny Kerr, with Joe Marler, and Let's hear from some of those guys. Now, this is firstly, Phil, you having a chat with the guy who was injured for a lot of last season, but he's looking back and looking fit as well by the sounds of things.
Yes, looking in great shape. He actually said he's been working on losing a bit of weight. This is Jordan Turner Hall.
So I'm here with Jordan Turner Hall, Harlequins in England. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you, mate. Nice early start, just at the Shard with a great view. So I've never been here, so it's a great morning.
Yeah, me neither. I've been wanting to come up here for a while, but it's quite a good view, quite a good opportunity to come.
Yeah,
up.
I mean, it's got a 360 view. I've heard it's £50 to get up here, so it's a
is it?
Bargain. Yeah, we got here for free, so no, it's good.
I didn't know that. I've done all right there.
Yeah, I've managed to see the Emirates on the old telescope, so no, it's good.
All right. Yeah. How's pre-season going?
Yeah, I mean, it's brilliant. I mean, the guys have obviously had a rest, bit of a break away from rugby, but all the boys have come back. Obviously, we've got Adidas kit, so that's been brilliant.
Yeah.
We look the business, so, I mean, now it's just to act the business. So, boys been training hard, a lot of running, we skill-based work, and we're going to Grenoble next week.
Yeah.
Where we play Grenoble, so that'll be brilliant. And
travelling over to France.
Yeah, going to France for the week. We've got our team values day this Monday, and then we travel, so... we'll put a few principles in place and then set us up for the season, hopefully further on from that. But I mean, the boys, there's good buzz around the boys, and I'm looking forward to it.
Let's just talk about this, because have you ever done he sounds like a nice bloke, by the way. I've never spoken to Jordan Turner.
No, he's a very nice bloke. He's very relaxed and easy to talk to.
He talked about the team principles day, or
yeah.
I know me and Jay have been in one of these, because when we played in the same team, did Sedgley Park used to do this as well?
Yeah, did a few, not every single season, but yeah, a few on and off.
I know JB has strong opinions on these.
I think they're waste of time. they're nice because everyone gets a forum to give their two penneth, but you don't want to be the guy who looks around and goes, I have no confidence in this group of players whatsoever. And the year when Broughton Park got relegated, in the same team session that you were at, I was looking around that room and thought, this team isn't staying up. I don't know where we're getting some wins from. And yet we decided our goal was promotion.
No, so. But I think the problem with that season was we had that session, we got the clipboards out, we all wrote stuff down, and it never, ever got referred to again.
Oh, it never
Whereas
does.
Whereas actually, what you'd want to know, but I reckon what Quins will do and what good teams do is they will distill it down into some key points. They will pin that up on the board, and that is a set of values that they actually live by all seasons.
Do you remember... Aston Villa manager, is it John Gregory?
John Gregory, yeah.
Yeah. Now, one of the reasons John Gregory got fired is because he lost the respect of his players because he made them wear suit and tie to work in the morning. Oh, sorry, shirt and tie, not suits.
What, to turn up to training?
Turn up to training, and they said, no, we're not. I think that's a good idea. Look, if you pay me 30k a week, I'll show up in shirt and tie every day, even on my days off.
Let's get back to Jordan Turner Hall, but the reason I stopped that is because I wanted to play this bit of music before we hear the next bit. I think Phil might have a new man crush. Have a listen.
Can I just say, from when you were lined up with the boys before, best quads in the show?
Yeah, I pride myself on quads. I haven't got any hammies or anything, but yeah, no, the quads are good, yeah.
Quads on show, definitely.
Yeah, quads in. I'll get more oiled up for the game, so it's all good.
Anything you're doing particularly to work on them? Anything different this year?
No, all in genetics, mate. All in genetics.
Blessed.
Yeah, mum and dad, thank you very much. Yeah.
Then I've taken a bit out, but Phil then offered to massage them and got escorted out of the Shard.
That's weird, that, wasn't it? It was really weird.
It's fine. He's a good-looking lad.
We're just mates having fun.
Exactly.
All right. Well, then you.
Yeah, good chat, good chat. Jordan Turner Hall seemed very comfortable in front of the microphone, very relaxed, at ease. You then spoke to Marlon Yard, who now equally sounding like a lovely bloke. He's just started with his new club, which I think you can tell when you listen, because he's acting, isn't he, like a person who's just started at a new job, trying to keep his nose clean, not do anything to put his head above the parapet, doing everything by the book.
Yeah, he was very friendly, but he was like quite media trained and very straight down the line and talking in cliches.
I'll tell you what I'll do. As we listen to Marlon Yard, we'll make a little noise. When he says some sort of media trained type cliche, we'll play that noise.
Oh, nice noise, nice noise.
So what do you think of the new kits?
It's awesome. You know, being Adidas as well, being the leading sports brand, you know, they've got a real good way of, you know, making shirts. And with this iconic jersey and being Harlequins as well, it just brings a perfect fit. So I think everyone's really excited about the jerseys, and everyone's really excited to sort of kickstart the season now.
Yeah. And how's it going at Harlequins? How are you fitting in?
I'm only into my second week, so it's just about sort of getting my head down, working as hard as I can. And, you know, no pre-season's easy, so, you know, everyone's working really hard. The attitude's right, and yeah, it's really excited to sort of, you know, get the first game underway.
Yeah. Are you up to speed with all the nicknames yet of the Harlequins boys?
I knew quite a few of the guys before I even came, so sort of engaging them and speaking to them was quite easy. It's been awesome. The guys have been very welcoming, and it's a real good place to be.
Any good nicknames? We know Minty. Is there any others?
No.
Anything clever?
I think they call Luqual is Tarzan. So.
Tarzan, what? Oh, because of the hair.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, I think that's it.
There you go, yeah. That was Marlon Yard having a natter with Phil. They've got to have better, ruder nicknames than Tarzan for Luke Wallace, hasn't they?
I was really trying to drag it out of him, get some,
come on,
some good information.
Maybe
but...
it's because he only smashes girls called Jane.
If you're not aware of the Minty nickname, that is for Nick Easter, because he looks a bit like Minty, who used to be on EastEnders. He must be absolutely buzzing being part of that squad.
Yes, yeah. Particularly part of that back line, because it's a very exciting back line.
How big is he?
6 foot.
Really? I thought he's smaller than that. I thought he's quite a small guy.
No, about 6 foot.
Okay.
Quite well built.
What a talent. He is a real talent.
He'll be good.
Really?
Yes.
Mm.
Anyway, good stuff so far, and Phil met more people up the Shard.
So I'm here with Harlequins England and British and Irish Lion, Hugo Monier.
Hi, how you doing? You're well.
Not bad, thanks. Right, first things first, you're a very fashionable man. We've all seen your wonderful outfits on the BT Sports Sky when you've been doing pundit work. What do you think of Chris Robshaw's Joe Marler impression?
Right, Phil, you've got to explain this, because Hugo Monier obviously found that very funny, but I don't understand.
So when we arrived, first time we've seen Robshaw in a while, and he's got a lot more blonde streaks in his hair, which is similar to Joe Marler, and he's grown a nice big bushy beard.
He's been on Anglesey or something.
Similar to Joe Marler. And so I was referring to that. That's what I meant by my impersonation. I'm not sure, like listening back to this, I'm not sure if he got that from it, or whether Joe Marler actually does a Chris Robshaw impression.
That's
sorry,
what I'm
Chris...
thinking. I think you might have accidentally stumbled into a bit of
in-squad
banter that no one's aware of, well, about actual impressions that
Marler's
they do of
fair,
each other.
Fairly unique character, and if anyone's going to be parodied, it would be Marler.
Well, Marler
or if
or
anyone's
going to
be doing the parodying, it'll
be Marler.
Practically stand-up comedian Joe Marler.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
So I think you might be right there. Let's listen to a bit more.
It's good. I think he's pretty much spot on, but I think the better question is, like, I'm not sure if you're aware of Joe Marler's Chris Robshaw impression.
Well, who was first?
I think it was probably Joe taking a mick out of Chris, and Chris has just retaliated. But yeah, Joe does a pretty good impression of Chris. You should check it out.
How was pre-season going so far?
Yeah, it's been really tough. Just head down, just grafting really hard. Great to integrate some of the players like Marlon, Tikratuma, the seven of the new academy guys that have come in. Just trying to get to know everyone. But first and foremost, first few weeks, just getting fast, getting strong, getting fit. And now we're just adding that detail. First game's next week, and just can't wait to get out there and just crack on.
Who's that first pre-season game against?
Lake Grenoble next week, and then Poe, and then Glasgow. So three tough pre-season games.
Yeah. During pre-season, obviously you'll be eating clean most of the time. Is there any cheat meal that you'd choose if you had a day off?
Nando's.
Would you?
Yeah, it'd have to be a Nando's. Yeah, I'd go chicken pita chips, I'd say, if it's a cheat day. Halloumi. Get some chicken livers in there as well, maybe a soft drink. Yeah, so you go big.
Have you got the Nando's black card?
I don't, unfortunately. Oh. Chris Robshaw's got one, though.
Hang around with him, then.
Yeah, so happens when you're England captain, I guess.
Hugo Monier there, talking to Phil and talking to the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast. Just by the way, my boss at XFM has got one of those Nando's black cards.
What?
And it gets you six people, anything you want off the menu, anything.
So wow.
All completely for free, whenever you want. There's no limit on the number of times you can use it as well.
Wow. So if I want to go and have two whole chickens to myself,
it's up to you, Phil.
Go for it.
Now. As cheap meals go, that's pretty good.
It's not a bad cheap meal.
Yeah, if you're
with
a cheap halloumi and chicken, it's pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it could do a lot worse. He's in good shape, is Hugo. His shoulder to waist ratio was undoubtedly the highest.
Wow. That's a ratio you want to win.
Highest in the room.
Do you know what I wish you would have asked him, Phil?
What?
Who's faster, him or Marlon?
Well, if I got an interview with Mike Brown, which I was pushing for, but because of his commitments, like he's been a Six Nations Man of the Autumn Internationals, yeah. he was just too busy with other people. I was going to talk to him about his work with Margot Wells, the speed
good.
Coach, and try and find out who is the fastest in the squad. But unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to do it.
Best go back down there.
I know. Next time, Harlequins are kind enough to offer us an invite to something like this.
Now, Phil's got loads of good stuff. And a little bit later, when we come to the conclusion of our one man 15, this is where we try and pick what we think is the best player in the world by doing something like the old Jonah Lomu PlayStation game, when you used to be able to unlock a team full of Jonah Lomu's 1 to 15. We're trying to do a thing at the minute where we pit players against each other, imagining that there was a whole team only of that player. Now, the Quins boys have given their thoughts on who they would have 1 to 15 in world rugby, so you're going to hear that from them. But before we depart Quins for the time being, let's just get some of the brilliant liners that Phil managed to get for them for us on the Egg Chasers podcast. Now, we pride ourselves on these. We've had Jack Berger saying that he listens to the podcast whilst he's hunting his wildebeest for dinner.
Yeah, it certainly does.
In Namibia. This is Joe Marler.
Hi, I'm Joe Marler. When I'm impersonating Zangief from Street Fighter, I always listen to... Hi, I'm Joe Marler. When I'm impersonating Zangief from Street Fighter, I always listen to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast.
And if you're too young to remember Street Fighter 2 on the old Nintendo, on the old SNES, Super NES...
Yeah.
Then you should look it up, because basically the guy looks exactly like Joe Marler.
Now, when Joe Marler finished that... He checked that I'd stopped recording, and then he said, "You f- you can bleep that if you want to."
Yeah. Bleep button was on the go. This is Hugo Monnier.
Hi, I'm Hugo Monnier, and when I'm not scoffing my face eating Nando's, I always listen to Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast.
Now, we can't say what you asked him to say, but he refused to say it. He didn't want to say it.
Yeah.
We'll just leave it at that.
He did.
We'll leave refused. It at that. Here is Marlon Yard.
Hi, I'm Marlon Yard. When I'm not changing direction like a housefly, I like to listen to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast.
Oh, the human housefly, love it. And finally, check out, I believe Danny Kerr had a mouthful of food at the time you asked him this, is that right? And couldn't wait to get out of the Shard.
Basically, yeah, he was on his way to training, he was taking on some food because he was about to go and train, and I just grabbed him for 30 seconds as he was literally walking out the door.
Hi, I'm Danny Kerr. When I'm getting a high and tight haircut, I always listen to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast.
High and tight, yeah. All right, listen, you can always get in touch with us at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. But let's get on to the Super Rugby final. New South Wales Waratahs were the victors, and I think we were all agreed, weren't we? I mean, me and Phil actually predicted a narrow win for Canterbury.
Idiots.
Well, it could not have been closer. It was a one-point game.
Oh, yeah. And it was the lead changed over with, what, 2 minutes to go? Less than 2 minutes to go?
Right, okay, yeah. I suppose being nearly right is the same as being wrong, isn't it, though? So, still wrong.
But a brilliant... I'm going to say a big cheese, a cliche now, but a great advert for Super Rugby.
Oh, I think the winner that day was rugby.
Rugby was the winner.
Yeah. Thank you.
Really, really good match. And when Waratahs started... like so strongly and went, was it 11 points
11
up?
11 points up, yeah.
And you actually said to him you thought this could be a rout.
Well, I was in training on Thursday, and I was having a debate with an Australian fellow who plays in our team, and I was telling him that I think Adam Ashley Cooper is massively overrated. And then I proceeded to tell you guys that about the conversation about Adam Ashley Cooper being overrated, scored.
And might I point out, as Phil was saying, no, he's had a good 10 years playing brilliantly at Super Rugby and playing brilliantly at international level, and he's so versatile and can play in so many positions.
Well,
shut up, Phil. Adam Ashley Cooper's just scored.
Yeah. He scored not one but two tries and got the official man of the match.
Oh dear. Tell you a man who I thought was quiet, Israel Folau.
Yeah.
Waratahs were the best team. Everyone talks about their attacking skill and their back line and players like Folau and Kirtley Beale, all the rest of it. But it was their defence, I thought, was so aggressive.
Yeah, which we mentioned last week as well.
Getting off the line that quickly.
And the chop tackles as well. If you're a young kid, which I can't imagine too many of them are listening to this.
I hope not.
Watch that game, because everyone was tackling low round the legs and chopping people, and they were just falling where the tackle was made.
Ooh, interesting point. Just going off topic a bit. Seattle Seahawks, who are the current Super Bowl champions, and it's a video about how to tackle in NFL like rugby players. narrated by the head coach of Seattle Seahawks. We can come back to that. But yeah, I thought that.
Yeah, it's something we've,
and it's about the chop.
It's something we've mentioned a few times when we've been watching NFL.
Yeah, and they look at the players, the rugby players making the tackles, and they've called them things like, they've Americanized, it's like the confrontation tackle, the missile chop, and you know that, those kind of things.
Well, let's come back to that. Let's just talk this final for a minute, because I think it was about half time. We were going, oh, Dan Carter's been really, really quiet. And Phil, you made the observation. You said, you know what? I'll say it again. I think we could be seeing the end of an icon.
I think so.
And then he limped off just into the second half
after he kicked the ball.
Yeah, no contact, innocuous. No one around him.
Now, the Crusaders' biggest mistake by some distance was putting Richie McCaw in a six shirt, because all this did is confuse the ref. So the ref will always give Richie McCaw whatever he wants if he's in a seven shirt. But if he's in the six shirt, the ref can't immediately make that decision that it's Richie McCaw. So he's blowing up for things Richie McCaw should never be blown up for.
Yeah.
You know, if he comes in from the side, well, that's Richie McCaw's decision.
Yes. Yeah.
That's his birthright.
Hands on the floor is fine for Richie McCaw. So, and Crusaders didn't exploit this because Matt Todd, who's wearing the seven, doesn't normally get this amount of freedom.
Yeah, because he plays by the rules. And you can see it in Craig Joubert's face. He blows the whistle and goes, oh, what have I done?
Oh, I've just penalised Richie McCaw for an infringement on the floor.
The rugby Illuminati are going to end my career. So, yeah, that was our biggest mistake.
Richie McCaw did get pinged a lot, didn't he? It was quite unusual.
Yeah, well, he gave away that last penalty for the kick.
He did. Yeah, and one of many penalties he gave away.
I was reading an article about him today. He's got, like, something like 4 World Players of the Year, 3 Grand Slam tours, a World Cup. The list goes on and on and on. So actually, he doesn't need another one. Yeah, he's got a Lions whitewash.
Losing one grand final in Super Rugby is not going to taint, or even giving away a load of penalties in it, is not going to taint his reputation one bit.
No.
So that's Super Rugby. Let's gear up for the brand new Premiership season. And the last two teams that are going under the microscope in the Aviva Premiership in our club close-up. Now, we've looked at every single one of the teams, bar Saracens and Leicester.
Correct.
Arguably, we've kept two of the big guns till the end. Certainly, in the case of Saracens, looking at their squad, you'd have to think, well, but no, in fact, both of them. They're both the big guns. So let's get straight into this. Let's start with Saracens. So the way we're going to look at this, we're going to look at the recruitment that they've made over the summer, the squad they've got, and how we think they'll fare in the coming season. We also look at their stash. Now, they're keeping the same stash as they did last year, that stripy get-up.
I don't like that. I know you do, but I don't. The only thing I like about it is the CNBC logo on the front.
Or Allianz, isn't it, as well?
I don't know, but it's a little one. It's a little one, just by the collar.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty cool, that is.
In the centre.
Yeah.
I like the home shirt, because it's the traditional colours. The away shirt is just like...
The away shirt is a bit just bland. It's just gruel, isn't it? It's grey gruel. It's just bland, boring.
The recruitment that for Saracens, it's been quite a quiet summer.
Yeah, it has.
Jim Hamilton.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, God.
Is their biggest signing.
Mr. Tiny Corves.
I think that will turn out to be quite a good signing.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be all right.
They've got a prop from Montpellier in Juan Figolo,
who will come in to replace Matt Stevens, who's leaving.
Exactly.
But do you know what? If you looked at Saracen's transfer policy a few years ago when they brought in very relative unknowns like Jack Berger, Moritz Botha, who's number 8?
Joubert.
You know, all these guys who think, who are these guys? And they turn out to be awesome. Mm. Don't be surprised if Saracens know a thing or two before bringing them in.
They've signed Western Force's Kieran Longbottom as well. He's not an Australian international, but he has 57 Western Force caps to
Is
his
that
name.
Prop?
Yeah, yes. Prop. So how do you see Saracens going from very nearly winning it to just going one better?
They were seconds away from winning, weren't they, that final? They comfortably beat Clermont Auvergne in the semi-final of the Heineken Cup.
One of the best performances I've ever seen, actually.
Yeah, that defensive performance was incredible. Although they did lose quite comprehensively to Toulon in the final game, but that's playing the best team in the world, arguably.
Maybe the best team ever assembled.
Yeah.
It's probably not even worth trying to bridge that gap, is it? It's just hoping you get Toulon on a bit of an off day and you have a real
I think the only way you're going to beat
day.
Someone like Toulon is through teamwork and ethics rather than big spending, because you're not going to match them.
Yeah,
you can't.
It's impossible to match them because they've got 3 times the salary cap.
Exactly.
The criticism that was aimed at Saracens, and no one questions their grunt, their organisation, their defensive work, but the criticism that was aimed at them was the ability to just have a spark of inspiration or a bit of flair.
Yeah, the creativity of their backs could definitely be questioned.
Well,
when you've got people like Wigglesworth, like Farrell, like Brad Barrett, who are very solid players, but they're not exactly going to show and go 50 yards, step in the fullback, are they?
Well, when the brag for your scrum half is he's the best kicking scrum half in the league, it's time to hold your head in your hands. I watched them play sevens yesterday, and they play sevens like they play 15s. And safe to say, they got hammered.
Well, the first game that they played, I think they played Wasps, and they beat them very comfortably because they had two Kenyan lads.
Oh, yeah, but they were useless.
Two ringers
later
who
on.
Played fantastically in the first game, scored two tries each. And then against Harlequins had like some real good sevens players.
Harlequins were amazing.
Charlie Walker, Oliver Lindsay-Haig, they tore it up. I think Saracens will be exactly what they were last year. They'll be very strong in contact, very strong up front. The defence will be very good, but they might fall short again because they lack that little bit of spark.
Mm. I think a real big addition will be Will Fraser getting fit. I think what it'll allow him to do is rest Jack Berger. Someone like Jack Berger can't play every game. It'd be physically, the laws of the universe, laws of physics don't allow it. You can't make that many hits. So they'll need to rest him against, when they play, I don't know, the likes of Newcastle. I think that will make a big difference.
Yeah.
They're like a boa constrictor.
Exactly.
They don't go in for the kill and with venom and a quick kill. They'll go for a slow death and they'll just squeeze you and squeeze you and squeeze you and squeeze you and grind out wins. And I think that's what they'll do all season because they've just got power.
Yeah. I think the best thing they could do is just don't change anything and keep going.
All right, well, before we decide how we think that they're going to fare this season, why don't we talk about Leicester Tigers?
Yes.
Who would have had, by their standards, would have had a disappointing season. They're also keeping the same stash, which is fabulous.
Yes.
For their home shirt, because that was our favourite.
But they had...
How did you describe their home kit? Like a Jaguar X-Type in stash
indeed.
Form.
Indeed. It's a lovely
British
kit.
British engineering. It's a lovely... The away kit, which is like a tartan picnic blanket.
It's very odd. It's the biggest gap in kits between a great home kit and a terrible away kit. But also, I'm sure they kept the third team or the third change kit as a third kit from 2-3 years ago.
The European kit.
Oh, it's disgusting. It's offensive to my eyes.
Oh, that grey one.
Yeah, but like tiger stripes.
That is horrible. That is horrible.
It's like a five-year-old designed that kit.
A lot of players have left Leicester.
Yes.
A lot. Let me just rattle through these. Thomas Waldron, Boris Stankovic, Ryan Lamb, Toby Flood, Rob Hawkins and George Shooter. I suppose they're peripheral figures, really. Dan Bowden's a big player that they've lost.
Other than that,
they've lost a lot of kind of squad players. But those are six frontline first team or thereabouts players. They have brought a few players in.
Mainly from Italy.
Well, sounds like a recipe for success. Tell me more.
Benetton Treviso.
Brought in Saramaya Bai. Is it Bai? How do you say
yeah.
his name?
Who's, what, 36?
Tell you what, it just shows what confidence that they have in their fly half position.
He's 35. He's got quite a few caps for Fiji. Interesting to see who wins the battle of that 10 shirt. I think they'll rotate them a bit, but it'll be interesting to see the big games, who they go for.
And not only that, neither of them strikes me as a guy that can move to 12.
What I really love about Christian Loamanu, who signed from Benetton Treviso.
The Japanese.
Japanese international, originally from Tonga. He's listed as, when you look at playing positions, wing, centre, fullback, number 8.
Nice. That's kind of guy. Now, that either says a lot
about
him.
That's perfect about Valesta, don't you think?
Yeah. Well, either says a lot about him, or it says a lot about Benetton Treviso.
Well, Benetton Treviso, there's a few players gone to Sale as well, Di Marchi and Luke McLean. A few players gone to Wales. Like, is anyone going to be left in Benetton?
Benetton, the rugby equivalent of Southampton, which is for some reason everyone thinks their players are world-class, despite them not doing anything world-class.
I think the Leicester and Sale signings are actually good players, like proven internationals, experienced internationals.
But they're not beating...
They will get value.
How do you think Leicester are going to fare?
I think Leicester last season were very hard hit by injuries. Moneypola was out for a long time, Dan Cole had to play 80 minutes, and then Dan Cole got injured and Moneypola was having to play 80 minutes.
I think you're right to say Tuilagi's going to have a full season, hopefully, touch wood.
Yeah, and with Anthony Allen in the centres.
Dan Cole to come back at some point.
Yeah.
Massive difference those would make. That'd be like new signings.
Yeah, and I think when you look at the first 15 that Leicester can put out, it's can match a team like Saracens up front and for the defensive qualities, but they also have players like Tuilagi, like Nicky Geneva, like Ben Youngs when he's on form, and Matthew Tate, who can break the line. Leicester will do better than they did last year.
Well, let's get to it, because what we've been doing as we've been going through this is we've been putting people in the league table where we think they'll finish, and we've done 10 of the teams. So what positions have we got? Well, go run through the table as it is, Phil.
So in 12th, we've got Newcastle, then London Welsh in 11th, Exeter 10th, London Irish 9th, Sale Sharks 8th, Wasps 7th, Gloucester 6th, Quins 5th. We don't have anyone in 4th. We have Bath 3rd, Northampton 2nd, and 1st is available. So 1 and 4 are available for Leicester and Saracens to slot into.
Let's flip that round. Who of the two do you think is more likely to finish top?
Saracens.
I think in a one-on-one game, I would edge Leicester. But yep. I do think that Saracens probably have like the attritional strength to do it over the season like they did last year. Mm-hmm. So I think they might finish top.
When you add Jeff Parling back into the mix.
Yeah. They've got three really good
Manu Tuilagi having a full season if he does, again, touch wood.
Yeah, if Tom Croft
Tom
comes
Croft
back.
To come back, Dan Cole to come back.
Croft won't come back until a month before the World Cup.
Six Nations.
Six Nations. You'll have a jaunt in Six Nations, I guess. No, hear me now, believe me later. Leicester fourth.
We've now looked at every single team in the Aviva Premiership and we've come to the following conclusion. Let's go from bottom to top again. Newcastle Falcons will be relegated.
Yeah.
Thank God.
London Welsh will just escape. Then Exeter, London Irish, Sale, Wasps.
So it'll be Wasps again who will get into the playoff for Europe.
In seventh position.
And the top six, the two teams that will get into the
European Champions Cup
but will not get through to the playoffs will be
Gloucester and then Quins.
And the four teams who will make it to the knockout
will be Leicester in fourth, Bath in third, Northampton second, and Saracens again in first.
Pick a winner now. Right now, before a ball's been kicked, before a game's been
winner
played.
Of the playoffs or winner of the league?
Winner of the final on the 31st of May next year.
Bath.
I'm going to say Leicester.
Not happening.
I'm going to say Leicester.
Wow.
That was my gut feeling.
Yeah, I think Leicester will have a good season next year. Saying that, I think any of that top five, including Quinton's, if they do make it into the top four.
Oh, yeah. I feel boring saying the same one that Phil said.
Guys, that's your role.
It's like when me and my girlfriend go out for dinner and we both want the same thing, but she says, oh, no, I can't. I don't want to have that. I don't have the same as you.
But do you not do what me and Kate do? We always buy a different meal and then share the two.
No.
Half and half.
Sometimes I enjoy doing that.
But I don't mind stealing off my other half's plate, but she's not having my food.
Can I just say this is no euphemism as well? This is just, we're just talking about food.
Half and half tonight, Kate.
Yeah. Oh, dear me. Right. What are we talking?
We've got the one man 15.
Oh, good shout, Phil. Good shout, Phil. Let's talk one man 15. Now, this all came to light because Phil and JB came up with the idea that you could decide who the best player in the world is by doing what happened in the Jonah Lomu rugby game on the PlayStation, where you could unlock a team of 15 Jonah Lomus, a devastating and fearful prospect. The theory is the best player in the world would be the person who, if you put 15 of that player out, would be any other team made up of 15 of anyone else.
Makes perfect sense.
Right. So we asked for some suggestions of who you would like to see in our one man 15 knockout. We've got ourselves all the way to the final set of matches.
Yeah. So we've got semi-final and then final, which we'll run through all in one.
Mm-hmm. But our semi-finals are what, Phil?
Kean Healy versus Kieran Reid and Manu Tuilagi versus Sergio Parisse. Let's do the first one. Kean Healy versus Kieran Reid.
All right. There's going to be some injuries. There's going to be some walking wounded after that game.
Yes. Not even really Kean Healy's in the semis.
I'm just going to go straight off the bat. My gut feeling is Kieran Reid's going to win it.
It's not even close. Kean Healy shouldn't have even been in the competition.
He was in it because of you arguing the props.
Me.
Now he would be worth quite a few penalties at scrum time and probably I'd say 15 points in a match just from the boot from penalties.
You're
and
assuming
the screw there.
You're assuming Kean Healy can kick sticks.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
You make
that's
a good point.
I need to get penalties right in front of the post, 5 yards out.
But have in the semi-final and the final of Super Rugby for Canterbury Crusaders, hasn't Kieran Reid just shown why he was World Player of the Year?
Yeah, he had a few months off because of concussion, and the last few games that I've watched him, he's been incredible. He's everywhere. His ball carrying's unbelievable. Always makes yards, always makes the right option, is off, always offloads perfectly, makes his tackles, and just does everything.
It's what makes a great number eight, and it's why when I think Haskell, players like Haskell has tried to play number eight, and you can probably think of many, many examples. I don't want to be cruel to James Haskell because he's a fantastic player and he's especially good at blindside, I would say, but that rugby intelligence that you get in the best number eights, think of all the best number eights, the way they read the game, the way they float in and out, the way they just track across a field and arrive at the right time, the right place. That is Kieran Reid.
Yeah, and when he finds himself in the centre or on the wing or doing the tough stuff up front, he doesn't look out of place doing any of it. So, yeah, Kieran Reid comfortably beats Kian Healy.
Well done. Thank you. You've come all this way, Kian. Well done. But you go no further. Kieran Reid is going to play in the final against one of
Manu Tuilagi or Sergio Parise.
Oh, this is mouth-watering.
Yeah. Because
Parise can do it all. We've seen him kick brilliantly. We've seen him gas people from 40 yards. We've seen him make monstrous tackles, turn over the balls on the ground, offload.
And
the guy's an unbelievable specimen. Looked brilliant in his pants. Bed a bevy of incredible-looking women. He can do it all.
And also, when Stade Français went bankrupt, the one player they couldn't afford to lose and wouldn't lose was Sergio Parise.
Mm.
Everyone else kicked at the curb, but not Sergio.
Now, Sergio, like Kieran Reid, if he finds himself in the centres, on the wing, wherever, he doesn't look out of place.
Yeah, but he's a bit more abrasive than Kieran Reid, isn't he? I don't think he reads the game quite as well. He's
I don't know.
His handling
is incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think he's just a physical specimen. I think
he is.
Oh, he's an incredible.
He's both. But I'd say that Manu Tuilagi, if you put him doing like a 6 or an 8 job or doing the rough stuff up front, he wouldn't look out of place either.
Well, I don't know. I think Manu Tuilagi looks out of place anywhere inside of 13 when it comes to the backs. He's not a great ball handler.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, you could look at it positively. You could go looking at the strengths that they have, which one has the better strengths. But also you could look at it as in, we've already identified, if Sergio Parise found himself at 13, he would know what to do and would make a good decision. Would Manu Tuilagi be as reliable if he was out of his regular comfort zone position or positions?
No.
I'd argue he would be. I think he could play as well at 10, certainly, as Parise could.
Yeah. No, ridiculous thing to say. Ridiculous. I'm going to say Sergio Parise wins this, and I'm not willing to debate it any further.
Phil, what's your gut feeling?
I did pick Tuilagi at the start. I'm tempted to agree with Jay, but I think I'm going to pass it on to you, Tim. I think it would be incredibly close.
Oh, you
but I'm going to sit on the fence, but I'm going to say Tuilagi to make the choice yours, Tim.
Right, well, I have got a decision. It's going to be 2 number 8s in the final.
Of course. Ooh, it is.
Yeah, Kieran Reid against Sergio Parise.
I don't blame you.
2 incredible players. And I think what we've come to is, and this whole thing was about picking one team, 1 to 15, with the same player. And we have come up with 2 of the best all-round rugby players.
Yeah.
In terms of skill base, in terms of intelligence, decision making,
strength, pace. Yeah, you
handling.
Name it. You name it, these boys can do it.
Feel free to make your own decision on this one, but we're going to try and do that now.
Ooh,
Kieran Reid.
Flashbacks.
Versus Sergio Parise.
Let's get ready to rumble.
What are you thinking with this one, JB? Phil?
I'm going to have to say Kieran Reid. I just think the whole team would be just a bit better.
I look back over... So Kieran Reid, for the last 2 or 3 years, has been best player in the world. He was the best player in the world last year, as voted by the IRB. He scores tries, he does everything. But Sergio Parise has been doing that for 10 years
now,
consistently.
I am not saying for a second that Parise is any better or worse, but you can make up your own mind after I put my evidence forward. Sergio Parise was comfortably the best player in his team, i.e. Italy, and recently in Stade Francais after they'd been ravaged by financial troubles. But he plays for Italy and a bad Stade Francais team.
Yeah.
Whereas Kieran Reid is the best player in the Crusaders and the All Blacks.
All Blacks team that was unbeaten in 2013.
Correct.
He was the best player in that team.
Using that as a benchmark, it has to be Kieran Reid.
Just looking at the stats, Sergio Parisse is 1 inch taller and exactly the same weight. So there's nothing, difference there.
I love it. You would know. I reckon if someone had to guess just from listening to the podcast, what job does Phil do? The way you always go back to numbers and figures, it's like, oh, he'll be a quantity surveyor. He loves numbers. He loves figures. He loves spreadsheets.
And rules. He loves rules.
Rules and spreadsheets. Now you're talking, Jay.
I think Kieran Reid also. You're quite right, Phil, to point out that Sergio Parisse has got a decade of incredible performances and being a one-man team at times for Italy. That might be doing some of his colleagues down, but he's been so influential, and he would have walked into...
could you ever put down Ramiro Paz or Christian Stoiker?
He would have walked into any international team in the world and been their best player for years at number eight. And that's not to be underestimated, but I think we're picking it right now, today, and on that basis, I think Kieran Reid is that player who would walk into any team, club, international, and would be the best player in that team comfortably, and I don't think you can look past him. We could have made this whole thing a lot shorter because we probably could have picked this.
Yeah.
we've arrived at the world IRB World Player of the Year as our champion of champions.
Wow. We're all mavericks. I mean, if it's up to me, it would have been Charles Britz.
And we spent a month doing it.
Yeah, well, it's close season. We needed something to talk about.
Sorry, guys.
It's done the job.
And by that token, what it means is that if Codemasters and PlayStation, Sony, want to produce a new rugby game and one has been long overdue, then it should be Kieran Reid Rugby.
Yes.
For the PlayStation 4.
Exactly. Now, can I just pick you up on a point you made then? I don't think Sergio Parisse would have been the best eight in any country that they decided
to play. Let's go back 5 years. Name a better one.
5 years. Let's go through a list of number eights 5 years ago.
Martin Curry.
Jordan Crane.
Andy Powell?
Not as good as
Who was French number eight? Harry Nordicke. He is an all-time legend, actually.
If he'd have been a New Zealander, he'd have been a World Cup winner.
Yeah.
Well, you might not have got in the team.
I do think he would have got in virtually any team. Over that period. And it would have been incredibly interesting to see him, see how he would have done, whether he could have been the best player in the best team.
Yeah.
But A worthy runner-up. Well done, indeed. Kieran Reid. We just played the Rocky music there. We're going to get onto Rocky in just a second. But let's go back to Harlequins. And Phil caught up with some Quins players in the Shard and asked them if they could have one player, 1 to 15, who would they go for? You're going to hear from Hugo Monier. You're going to hear from Joe Marler. You're going to hear from Marlon Yard. And first from Jordan Turner-Hall.
15 of one player. Who would it be?
That's a great question. I think you've got to go with pace and power, haven't you? I mean, if you've got... What's that? This sounds bad. Who's that New Zealand winger?
Julian Surveyor.
That's it. 15 Surveyors. Yeah.
Right.
I think.
Yeah. Excellent. Cheers, Jordan.
And he wasn't talking about quantity surveyors. Yes. The next one you're going to hear from is Marlon Yard.
I know, it's a tough one. I think if just referring back just to the actual... tool of just being on maybe someone like Ben Smith, 15 of him,
pretty unplayable, can do everything, can't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's a good player, he had a good tour against us, so it's probably our current form, I'd say him. Yeah,
well, Ben Smith was one of the people that was suggested, and we did put him in, but he got knocked out in the first round, didn't he? Against Kean Healy,
he was Kean Healy.
What was he gonna do?
Next up, this is Danny Kerr.
I think coming away from after obviously a long tour in New Zealand, I'd say someone like Julian Surveyor. I think he's as close to Lomu as they've probably had. Unbelievable finisher, great hands, and a very powerful bloke, so I'd say probably him.
And a big lad as well.
15 of him would be hard to stop.
And is there anyone who would be completely useless if they had to cover 1 to 15?
I think I'd be pretty useless 1 to 15. All right, in a couple of positions, but I'd struggle up front, I think.
Okay, cheers, Danny.
Thanks, mate. Cheers.
That was Danny Kerr. Julian Surveyor was a popular selection, and he didn't make our shortlist, did he?
No, he didn't. Got overlooked.
So just to reiterate what we're doing, we've got our champion of champions, Kieran Reid, and in Street Fighter fashion, we're going to flip games now from Jonah Lomu Rugby to Street Fighter 2. And now it's like we need a load of end-of-level bosses to test our champion. So Julian Surveyor could be an end-of-level boss to test our champion. We could hypothetically put 15 Surveyors against 15 Kieran Reid.
Did George North...
get into
No, George North didn't get suggested either. And yeah, we'll be hypothetically putting those players head to head. So you can always get in touch at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. Right, next up is Ugo.
Who could do the job 1 to 15? Well, you look at what happened in the summer, and Surveyor's not a bad player. He could definitely play the back row. He's a big boy. He's fast. He's capable. He can tackle. He'd be up there for me at the minute.
Okay. And is there anyone who couldn't do it, wouldn't be able to play, couldn't cover back three or couldn't scrummage, something like that?
It's amazing because there's quite a few names that sprung to mind straight away. None I want to go on at the moment.
Well, Danny Kerr said himself.
Yeah,
he's just being modest, though.
He sprung to mind, but no, I mean, Danny's a talented player. I couldn't say anyone. No, I'd be a bit harsh.
Okay, cheers, Ugo.
Cheers, mate.
You can hear the media training, can't you? Because you know that if he'd have said, yeah, Danny Kerr, then that could have been a headline in a tabloid. Ugo Monier says Danny Kerr is the worst player in the world.
That's a large assumption. You think the tabloids care what Ugo Monier thinks.
Yeah. Well, I would have been straight on the phone to the Sun, the Mirror, the Daily Star.
They'd have gone, no, actually, we're not interested in that because Mark Wright and Michelle Keegan have just gone out for dinner. So that's a much bigger story.
Just on that, did you see someone tweeted Mark Wright, congratulations on winning the Super Rugby and getting your Man of the Match award because Adam Ashley Cooper is
sorry,
spitting image of Mark Wright.
Well, you should be very proud that you just asked that question.
Who is he?
He's off that The Only Way Is Essex, and now he's famous. He's famous.
How do you two know him?
He's famous for being famous and turns up to the opening of an envelope and is basically a professional paparazzi fodder. That's pretty much.
I can tell you why I know him, because he was in Rosso one time and two of our friends said, that's that guy from The Only Way Is Essex.
Who have you been hanging around with?
Right, next up, let's get back onto rugby. Joe Marler. Now, what I love about this is Joe Marler took his decision on what to come up with so seriously. He really thought this one through.
So do you remember the Jonah Lomu 15 that you could unlock?
Was that the one with all the Jonah Lomus?
It was 1 for 15, Jonah Lomu.
There was another team that was, I can't remember what it was called, some sort of all-stars that were actually all the people that had made the game.
So yes.
They put the net, and they were actually better than the Joan Lomu All-Stars.
The Codemasters 15, they programmed it.
Yeah, so but I guess one of them's probably the best players in the world.
Well, maybe 15 years ago when it was made.
Yeah.
So we're trying to pick who, if you could have 15 players on your team, say you're the coach, which one player would you have, 1 to 15?
It's a tough one, that. Do you go big or do you go small?
Oh. One of our guys thinks that scrummaging is so important that you would have a prop every single time.
I wouldn't.
No, I personally wouldn't. But.
Yeah, mainly because you'd feel sorry for the prop having to do all that other...
Having to cover the back three.
It would probably, in his current condition, and I don't know how to say his name, but it's Rupeni... Thau, cow, babau.
Rupeni Thau Thau.
So, in his current condition, not in his peak.
Not when he was 21 and he burst onto the scene.
Exactly. In his current, is he just signed for Argen or someone?
La Rochelle or one of them.
He's carrying a bit more weight than he used to, but he's still pretty quick. So, I'd have him. He's a unit and he's quick.
Good shout.
And he's old school as well. He's got a gut.
He definitely has a gut. Cheers, Joe.
No, he's not.
Joe Marler appreciating a rugby player who still rocks a gut.
Now.
So we will be putting our champion of champions, one man 15, Victor, Kieran Reid, next week on the podcast up against Julian Surveyor, the selection of Jordan Turner Hall, Ugo Monier and Danny Kerr. And we will be putting Rupeni Thau Thau up against Kieran Reid and anyone else you suggest who should be the end of level bosses on our Street Fighter Brawl one man 15 battle between our champion Kieran Reid and any other player in the world that has been overlooked. JB's already said George North. That might be one you want to put forward at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. Let us know and we will do that battle royal next week. I played the Rocky music. I want to quickly hear a little bit about Rocky, because you went to see Sylvester Stallone in conversation at the Manchester Arena.
I did, actually, and I went with your good wife and some of her colleagues. It was interesting.
So what was the setup?
Okay, so here's the setup. You've got a man from Blackpool who seems to love, not just a little bit, but a lot, everything Sylvester Stallone's ever done. Now, his opening gambit was, when I was 18, I scraped up all of my birthday money and flew myself
to New York to watch the premiere of Rocky. How much money did he get for his 18th? That's what I want to know. Something like in 1980 something. Okay, so that's the first thing. Now, the second thing is, I didn't realise actually how many levels there are to Sylvester Stallone. And he's a poet, director, a few other bits and pieces, obviously actor. Writer, of course, because he actually wrote Rocky. Because of this, he's quite a complex guy. Certainly, I want to go as far as intellectual, but complex. The people that are in there watching him, there's a mixture of people who are, you know, passingly interested, such as me, and there's also the kind of guys who think Rocky is a documentary. Now, for these guys, this is not the thing to watch, because he comes onto the stage, and the way he comes onto the stage is incredible. So they've got, like, abseiling troops and all the rest of it, abseiling Marines. He's got a Royal Guard of Marines coming in. Then they're dismissed, and then they sit him down, and they go, "So, Sylvester, what was the hardest part of your life growing up?" And in the meantime, all the crowd are going, "Hey, Rocky! Adrian!" And they don't quite get it. It's like a Q&A. And then in the question-answer session, one woman stands up and goes, "I'd like to say I met you 4 years ago. You signed your name on my forearm. I then took my forearm to a tattoo parlour and I've got it tattooed." So this woman has got a tattoo of Sylvester Stallone's signature down her arm.
Awesome.
Oh, is it? Because the last thing Sylvester Stallone does at the end, when some idiot asks him a question like, "You're an inspiration to me. What inspires you?" Well, he said something like, "The thing which inspires me is getting up in the morning and affecting life and affecting the outcome and, you know, grabbing life and, you know, something really inspirational like that." I just thought, like, if you think Rocky's a documentary and you've got Sylvester Stallone's tattoo on your arm, what are the chances of you grabbing life?
You can affect what you're having for dinner tonight.
Let's talk about Sly. What was it like? Because I mean, we're just listening to another tune here from Rocky IV. I mean, this would be awesome. Every gym should just play the Rocky IV soundtrack on constantly.
He was pretty cool. Well, he was cool until the very end. So watching him, he's obviously got tons of charisma, very interesting, can tell a story. But there's a lot of people there that paid a lot of money to go. And at the end, in the VIP thing, which we skipped, but some of our friends went, he actually declined to go meet people.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
you know, you never want to be disappointed meeting your hero, do you?
No, and it's okay if you've got a passing interest, but if, for whatever reason it is, the last 20 years of your life have been dedicated to building your Sylvester Stallone shrine, this is heartbreaking.
Oh.
So I felt sorry for them, and I felt even more sorry for them that it was a spurious illness that had to have them whisked away. So, classic A-list, really charismatic, clearly very, very clever, in-depth bloke, but actually, bit of an idiot.
Mm.
Can I just play something from Rocky that's like, everyone? I mean, Rocky 1 won an Oscar, and it was...
Did it?
Yeah, it won an Oscar. Best Picture.
Crikey.
I love the death scene in... This sounds really morbid. I love the death scene in Rocky. I think it's Rocky 3, when Sylvester Stallone decides to take on Clubber Lang, who is B.A. Baraka's Mr. T.
He tells a good story about that.
Mickey, his trainer, dies, and then the noises that Sylvester Stallone makes are absolutely brilliant. Just have a listen. Just showing the depth of his acting.
Oh, the man's got range.
Mickey!
See, I always think that he sounds like he's actually saying, "No, Mickey, I want a Nintendo." Just listen again. I swear he's... Every time I hear it, I hear him saying, "I want a Nintendo."
sounds like Phil.
Anyway, good to meet him.
I didn't actually meet him. But
an inspirational fella? Was he inspirational?
Well, he's very clever, isn't he? Because, obviously, the way he got to where he is basically writing a film, and the perfect person to play the role in the film of a Philadelphia guy is him, because he's from Philadelphia. But it's kind of like me writing a film about a dyslexic Tory. You know, I'd be the ideal, you know, I'd be the ideal person to play it, but it doesn't mean it's any good. So I kind of feel like that.
Beautiful. Well, we have got one final thing to do on the podcast today. And again, we return to Phil's meeting at Harlequins. Now, I need to get some more music up for this one because this is something we've been doing because Phil is, for the first time... Are you playing any rugby, Phil?
Not at the moment. Certainly not for the next few months because I saw a shoulder surgeon last week.
Do you use your Booper season ticket?
Yeah.
What's your intention when you get back fit?
It all depends on work.
Bodybuilding.
Because I'm down in London at the moment.
Have you got a club in mind that you might give your services to? Would it be Sedgley Park Seconds and you stay with Sedgley Park?
I'd probably play, if I do go back playing, I'd probably play Sedgley Park Seconds.
Right. Well, you've been a one-club man. It'd be hard and weird to change clubs at this point. But no, Phil's injuries, work, it happens to everyone at that stage in your career where you go, do you know what, I'm going to have to knock it on the head. That means, though, Phil has never, ever supported a team because every weekend, certainly when he's not been injured, he's been involved in playing rugby from mini rugby through to the championship with Sedgley Park. And now he's going to experience what it's like to support a team, and we're asking for clubs to put forward and supporters of clubs to put forward reasons why it should be your club. And you met someone in quite a high profile position from Harlequins who wants you as a fan, Phil.
Yes, he came to me actually. I didn't have to go to him. He'd been listening to the pod and he came over and he said, I know.
Why are you laughing, JB? Why are you laughing?
Because all high-level executives listen to the pod. It seems silly that you mentioned it.
We're an influential podcast. Don't
exactly.
So David Ellis,
CEO of Harlequins.
He knew we were coming. We were on the list. Your name was down on the guest list.
Yeah, he thought, I'll have a word with that lad.
I'll make sure he comes and supports Quins.
Yes. And he pitched for me to be a fan.
So we've had lots of people on Twitter. We've had people writing emails. We've had loads of people. And if you want your club to be considered, it will mean that Phil will be a supporter of your club. He will buy the shirt. We will come and do podcasts from your ground. You will get much more prime time talk on the podcast. And your club could be centre stage with Phil as its newest recruit. Here is David Ellis of Harlequins trying to get Phil's support in the fan free agency.
Why should you support Harlequins? Well, there's a number of good reasons, but primarily it's because of the style of rugby we play. It's fast, it's fluid, it's loose, and we're famous for it. And we've been playing that style of rugby for since Adrian Stoop was at our ground in 1924. So it's exciting. You're going to see exciting rugby. But coming to Harlequins, it's a real family club. There's a place for everyone. It doesn't matter where you're from. And we've got some of the most exciting players in England playing there. We've got some of the most exciting youngsters coming through the academy. We've got more England players, England homegrown players than any other team in the whole of the country. We really focus on our community clubs and grassroots to make it one big family atmosphere on any given Saturday. So I think there's a few reasons in there, but you'd be welcome at the Stoop anytime.
Excellent. Thanks a lot, David.
Well, that's a slickly put together pitch, that.
Yeah.
Phil, once he's heard the pitch, is deciding whether or not to put the team through to boot room, which is a bit like an X Factor, you know, the way of putting through to boot camp. So like a shortlist.
Yes.
And the potential shortlist so far is Leicester Tigers, Bath Rugby,
Ulster,
and Old Sullians.
Yes, Old Sullians RFC.
Harlequins, what are you thinking? Now, not just because you were taken up the shard by Harlequins, again, not a euphemism, although that definitely would have sealed the deal for Phil. How are you feeling about it? Quins potentially being your club.
I do quite like Harlequins. I've quite liked them for a long time. I very much like the style of play. They do play a slightly more expansive game. He said they're a family club. And I really like the new stash as well. I could see myself buying and wearing
now,
that.
Can
that
I just
stash.
Say, I've been to a couple of Quins matches, both when they're in the Championship and in the Premiership. And it is, in my mind, on par with Bath for the match experience.
Really?
It is a really good old knees up afterwards inside the Stoop Stadium. Mm. And you can mix with all the players. There is no problem with that.
Oh, really?
All. Yeah. I mean, they've got this like little red rope, which I suppose if things get a little bit too much for them, they can hide behind, which is fair enough. But they don't use it. They come and mingle with the crowd. And there's a band on. And all the fans have got loads of money, so they're all throwing beer down their throat. So it's good.
I'm not sure I'll fit in with that.
No, you wouldn't. They do have a special paleo brew, though, so maybe that'd work for you.
Ooh, paleo brew, no, we're talking.
What I'll say on that one is I don't regard you, Phil, as a kind of flair man. You're quite down to earth. You're quite down to earth, gritty, northern, salt of the earth kind of like. I don't know. Would there be an element like Quinns, like you say, the style of play they trade is attractive and full of flair. The kit they wear is full of colour. Clientele are kind of
yeah.
So because you're a lower social standard to Quinns fans,
yeah,
and you like basic rule following rugby by numbers because it's, you know, it's easy to record and you can put it on a spreadsheet. Would you like to support Quinns?
But then on the flip side, we've already, you know, there's not many players that have been put into Banter Squad Run! But one of them is Joe Marler. And yeah. I had that experience when I was match announcing at South Sharks when I was stood in the tunnel and I was stood right next to the Harlequins dugout. They have more fun than any other team.
Including Saracens.
I can tell you that. Including Saracens, they have more fun than any other team. They have a brilliant atmosphere that they create amongst themselves. So it'd be not. I could see myself identifying with the players and buying into it.
Yeah, all very good. There's two negatives that I can see. One, obviously, me being a pie-eating northerner. Mm. I wouldn't fit in down there.
No.
And I'm a bit of a glory hunter, as we know. Mm-hmm. And I'm a bit worried about the state of their second row for next season.
Yes.
So with those two things.
They played nice sevens rugby, though.
They played lovely sevens rugby. Their ground's good. It'd be nice to go and have a nice Saturday afternoon in the sunshine in Richmond.
It is a nice Saturday afternoon there.
We can, yeah.
We should do that.
We should do that anyway.
But, Phil, what are you thinking?
So a couple of negatives, quite a few positives, but the negatives. So next season, I really want to be supporting a team with a good chance of winning something, which I do think Harlequins have. So I'm going to put them through.
Good
to boot room.
Choice. Good choice.
Well done, Harlequins. Some people will be calling fix, and some people will be calling that there's questionable morals of Phil having just been wined and dined up the Shard by Harlequins that he's putting them through to boot room.
No, that's exactly what he wants.
I endorse.
More wining and dining, please.
I endorse his decision. He's the Sepp Blatter of rugby, is Phil. But well done, Harlequins. You're through to boot room, and that is it for another podcast. Just suffice to say, if you and your club would like Phil to be its newest fan, if you want to shout about what makes your club great on the podcast, and if you want us to be putting your club centre stage, then get in touch with us. Twitter at Rugby Podcast. Let us know that you would like to put a pitch forward. Just a chance to shout about what makes your club so great. And we'll tell everyone about it, and we'll hear from you next time on the podcast. At Rugby Podcast on Twitter. We'll see you there in between now and next week. Thanks for listening. Nice one, JB.
Bye, Tim.
See you, Phil.
Cheers, Tim.
Hi, I'm Joe Marler. When I'm impersonating Zangief from Street Fighter, I always listen to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast.